Well, I am just, I can't tell you how thrilled I am to welcome Mariela Romero to the Culture Matters podcast today. She is not only a great friend, she's just an amazing person with just enormous amounts of influence. We're going to learn a lot from her as it relates to Latino culture, Venezuelan culture, as she has a background in Venezuela. She's even lived in Argentina. So I think you studied in Argentina, correct, Mariela?
That is correct. I lived in Argentina 6 years. I lived in Mexico 2 years, and I lived in France 1 year.
Wow. So we have all of these different cultural stories and cultural things that we can learn together from you. So what was it like transitioning? So you grew up in Venezuela, correct?
Yes, from birth till I was nine. And okay. Then I moved to France when I was nine.
And did you learn French then at that point?
Yes. Yes, I did. I actually learned it really fast. So in 3 months, I was placed in regular classes after I learned it was a class for foreigners. And I was there for 3 months. And then they put me in the class with the regular students.
So from Venezuela at 9 years of age to France, how many years then were you in France?
One year.
1 year in France and then back to Venezuela or?
Back to Venezuela for, okay. I think 2 years more and then to Mexico.
And then to Mexico, how long were you in Mexico?
2 years.
2 years. Were you in the federal district of Mexico or were you in?
Yes, my parents worked at the embassy, so we live in the suburbs of Ciudad de Mexico. Yes.
Okay, so was your dad an ambassador from Venezuela? What was your mother?
My dad, yes, he's a diplomat, and he was, you know, he was not ambassador at the time. He's now an ambassador, but yes, we follow his diplomatic career around the world.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. So then from Mexico back to Venezuela, and then you ended up studying in Argentina, correct?
Yes, because he was assigned to Argentina for 6 years. So that's why the whole family moved there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so you had quite a few different cultural transitions, right? So
absolutely.
I think it'd be really interesting, especially for a young girl, right? Because you were nine mm-hmm. when you first started.
Absolutely.
What were some of the lessons that you started taking away with these, I mean, from Venezuela to France, to Mexico, to Argentina, what were some of the things that you acquired culturally that just for you were lessons that you think would be really good lessons for our listeners to start to pick up on?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing that I learned when I moved to France was that, you know, growing up in Venezuela, we are very mixed. And you are never aware of your ethnicity or race because we see each other as Venezuelans only, right? And,
right.
And the color of our skin is a descriptive thing. It's not doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean
right.
anything regarding economic status or your place in the world. It doesn't mean anything. So when I moved to France, is the first time I learned that having a different accent, a different language, a different skin tone meant something else. And that was my first shock.
Because, oh, wow.
I had to learn. And not because I was mistreated, not because I was treated differently, but because the school where I was very diverse. And we, you know, we were in the same class with all the foreigner students learning French. You know, we had kids from Cambodia, kids from different parts of Africa, especially from Algeria. We had students from Poland and Portugal, etc. And I started seeing the interaction between all of those kids growing up in different countries that we found ourselves in Paris. And then it's a shock to see that the color of our skins means something different. And you know, kids, they ask you blunt questions.
Yeah.
Sometimes you are not prepared.
Well, Latin America is not so racist. It's much more classist in nature, right?
Correct.
Which for our listeners, perhaps you could kind of define the difference between racism and classism. I think that might be an interesting definition for people who are listening.
Yes. Well, I would define it like classism. If you're going to a restaurant, for example, in Venezuela, and you come in a Porsche, they will open the doors to you because it symbolizes that you have money, right?
Right, and, your status, right?
Your status, exactly. If you are walking and you are, you know, you are white, but if you arrive to a nice restaurant and they see that you just came off the bus or you walked there, they might not allow you there.
So, okay, so the whole concept of white privilege is different in those countries than it is, say, in the U.S., correct?
Correct. It's about, and also, for example, in Mexico is where I saw the classism more prevalent. I remember being in this very privileged high school. It was a Catholic high school run by nuns. And most of our teachers were not teachers that needed to work. They were very well-to-do ladies with master's degrees and PhD, very, very well educated. And, you know, teaching for them was a pastime. So most of our teachers were very well-to-do, except one biology teacher that we had. And you know, his story was he grew up poor, and he just through studying and being very intellectual and gifted, he just moved out of poverty. And I remember that at some point we were changing classes, and one of our classmates asked, "So what is the class that we have next?" And one said, "Biology." "Oh, the one with the napo." And napo means, you know, someone who is, you know, I don't know how to translate that word in English, but it would be someone of a lower class.
Right.
And it broke my heart because, you know, he did everything right to just, you know, rise to the top and being a teacher and being in this privileged environment. And still the students saw him as el napo because, you know, he was not well to do.
Was your family, your father, as a diplomat, was he a diplomat before Hugo Chavez or during?
Yes, before Hugo Chavez. He was a career diplomat. He was he worked for different administrations, even for the Chavez administration. And the thing is that my family was punished because during the Chavez government, my sisters and my mother, who were still living in Venezuela, they signed a petition against the government, and the government found out, and then my father lost his career because of the dissent that my family expressed. So, you know, he has been a diplomat all his life through education. He also comes from an empowerment, from a impoverished situation, and, you know, he went to public university, and then he studied it. He has master's degrees in La Sorbonne in Venezuela. So he is really someone who has studied and he's good at his craft, but he was punished by the Chavez government. They left Venezuela. One of my sisters, she lives in Denver. The other one lives in the Netherlands.
Okay.
And then my mom and my dad, because I am a U.S. citizen, I was able to bring them.
Okay, awesome.
The green cards, yes.
Awesome. So they're with you in Atlanta area, correct?
Correct, yes.
Amazing. So what is your thinking as it relates to what happened culturally in Venezuela? You know, it's a very difficult situation today, but I think what sometimes to me is more interesting is, you know, how did they get there? Right.
Yeah, I think Venezuela is a cautionary tale for the world. And I think everything has to do with a lack of intellectual education and also materialism. I remember one of the things that I noticed every time when I was living abroad and I came to Venezuela for vacations, etc. This was before Hugo Chavez, before he was a name that everybody knew. I remember coming back from other countries and my friends and family and relatives, they were interested in the brand of the shoes that I was wearing or what pants I had, the brand. It was very materialistic. I was not aware of the things that I was wearing. I was not, you know, I wasn't buying stuff because they had a specific brand that was associated with a economic status. In my friendships in Argentina, especially, they were very intellectually engaging. And my friendships in Venezuela were not. And I started seeing people in Venezuela more interested in just having things and status than looking at their surroundings and looking that poverty was something that was growing. And in every neighborhood in Venezuela, you have the good neighborhood and next door, a what we call un barrio, you know, and then the barrios were growing. And I saw those things growing and nobody caring and nobody taking, you know, action to reduce poverty. And it became a very materialistic society. That's where we are headed in different countries. And Venezuela is an example. When you don't take care of the poor, when you don't take care of that economic imbalance where you have people having a lot and then the growing population who do not have much, then the tides can turn and demagoguery wins.
That is so fascinating.
Yes.
That you bring this up this way. I've been... You're aware I have a book called The Six Stages of Cultural Mastery, and it's the first of a series of three. Mm-hmm. The last of that series is The Six Stages of Cultural Decay.
Mm-hmm.
The first stage of cultural decay is complacency.
Wow.
And what you just described is exactly that. A complacency of things that are happening around you culturally.
Yes.
Because things are okay. Maybe some of our listeners know this or don't, but Venezuela had the greatest economy in Latin America. I mean, it was
for years.
Yeah. It was the envy of all of Latin America economically and socioeconomically.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it was a stable democracy, you know.
Yes.
In the modern era, Venezuela didn't have any dictatorships like that we were seeing in Brazil or Paraguay or Argentina. You know, Venezuela was an envy to in the region, you know. It was that. It is my observation that it was somewhat of complacency and materialism that is the root problem of what we're living.
That's fascinating. So if I'm a non-Latino, right, leader, business leader, community leader, minister perhaps, and I want to reach the Latino community, mm-hmm. what are some things that you would say to them? Right? This is kind of the opportunity to do so.
So uh-huh.
What are some things that you would say to them that they should really keep in mind as they're approaching the Latino community? Just give me several things. Yes. If you want to prioritize them, that'd be wonderful as well.
Of course. I think the first thing is you know, this is a community that is very loyal. So they at the beginning could be mistrustful, but once they trust you, it would be a relationship, a very long relationship, unless, you know, you break that bond and that trust with them. And it is a community that needs a lot of education. It is a community hungry to do good, to prosper. It's a community that has left their countries with the hope of finding that stability and the growth for their family and prosperity for their families. And that hope can be very, very fragile. So the thing that I would ask as someone trying to reach the Latino community is do not break that trust. We have the word confianza. So do not break that confianza, that trust, because it's precious. So for me, loyalty and trust is the first thing that comes to mind. It is the most important thing for our community.
Yeah, and it's a community that's slow to trust, but once that trust is gained, then it's a lifelong relationship. And so the value of, you know, it may take a little bit more work on the front side, right?
Absolutely. It takes a little bit more work, but but also it is a long-term relationship. We are not interested in speed dating for all.
Yes. So speed dating in Latin America is not a thing.
I don't think, well, probably for some people, but not for culturally is not what we relate, you know.
that's like nursing homes in Latin America. That's not a big thing either, right?
Exactly. I have a very funny anecdote because I was driving when my son was in middle school. We were driving, and you know, he knows that I love Savannah, Georgia. Is a place that I feel a lot of. I don't know. I relate to that place so much. So he was asking me, "So, Mom, when you get old, are you gonna live in a nursing home in Savannah?"
Oh no!
And I said, "Mateo, let me tell you something. We are Latinos, and you know who's gonna be living with you?"
That's right. That's right. You used a word that I love, and it's the word confianza. And I love etymology, and so I always try to break these words apart. And of course, in Spanish, con means with, right? And fianza, a fianza, right? In economics, is a guarantee, right?
Yes.
It's a guarantee that we will fulfill an obligation. And so when you say the key is to gain that confianza, right? Mm-hmm. It's like with the guarantee that you're going to fulfill. And what I love about that word is that it's so true in the Latino community that if you break that trust, the community is so high context, right? It's so viral.
Very.
That you'll never get it back. And so I think it's really important for organizations. And I know you've been through 6 stages of cultural mastery, and that's kind of how we met. But this stage of just engagement with people, right? And getting to a point where people trust you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't break that.
No, you can't. You can't. It really is like a love relationship. It's full of love. And when you feel betrayed by your lover, it's like you can never trust your lover again. It's the same intensity of the relationship. It's very intense. And sometimes, you know, my partner is American, and for him, I am too passionate sometimes when I speak about something, and he is difficult for him to understand the level of passion that I have.
And he's in finance as well, so so an analytic, you know. So let's talk about this just a little bit, because in Latin America, I know even between you and I met. What, about a year and a half ago, you were emceeing an event that I was speaking at.
Correct.
And for Inroads, I believe it was.
Correct.
And a lot of times, even when we talk with people, or there are times when you and I talk, and you'll at the end of our conversation, you'll say, or I'll say, un abrazo or hasta un beso. Un abrazo means a hug, and un beso means a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very common in Latin America. You know, I spend a lot of time in the Dominican Republic, and I see workers in stores, male and female, hugging each other, physically hugging each other in front of clients. And, you know, it's a normal thing in Latin America. And that's our culture, right?
That is our culture. And, you know, I have a funny anecdote as well with this, because I used to work for CNN for a number of years.
Right.
And, you know, when they do those trainings about human resources, et cetera, the things that are appropriate, not appropriate, and you see those videos, and it's mostly related to sexual harassment, right?
Yes, yes.
So, you know, everybody goes through training and all that. And you know, at the time, at the CNN domestic and international, and for the rest of the CNN branches, they would, at the end of the course, they would say, do not pay attention to CNN in Espanol, because for them, kissing and touching and hugging, don't be alarmed.
So because you've now lived in multiple cultures, Mariela, right? Uh-huh. And now, of course, we have in the U.S. the cultural Me Too movement, right? Mm-hmm. You think it's healthy? To what point do you think it's healthy, unhealthy? I know it's a tough question, and it may be one you might not want to truly answer. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's a different world in Latin America and other countries. And sometimes Americans think that their way is the only way, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so I think, you want to address this a little bit?
Yes, of course. You know, I was reading an article a few days ago that French women are responding completely different to the Me Too movement, because they want to defend the right of men to hit on you. they appreciate that, you know? And
yes.
In some ways, you can take things too far. It also depends on the cultural environment that you're living in. Of course, when you have had years of people abusing a group of people, then the reaction is going to be extreme, right? And then I think everything at the end is going to find a middle ground. But to your point, one of the things that I noticed after living for so many years in the U.S., I've been living here for 23 years. When I go back to Venezuela, for example, I'm shocked about the billboards, for example, in the billboards and how women, the images of women are used, because now in the U.S., you don't see that. And probably you saw those images in the 60s or the 50s, but you don't see them anymore. And I think it has to do with women having economic power, and then the brands don't want to offend women, or they are targeting women who are more educated and have a different socioeconomic status. But when I go to Venezuela, it's funny because a product like Pine Sol, for example, they have billboards. It's called Mistoline.
Yes.
And then you have a lot of billboards with Mistoline, and then you have a woman in a bikini.
Well, I think Venezuela has more Miss Universes, along with Puerto Rico, right? Than any country ever, right? And so the moda is, fashion is important.
but one of the things that is shocking to me is that if growing up over there and not living ever, I would think that that is normal. Of, oh my God, they have this beautiful Miss Universe holding the Mistoline in her hand, and she's in a bikini, and I would not think of anything.
Right.
But because now I have lived here, it's like, well, the Mistoline doesn't have anything to do with her bikini.
Well, the deeper conversation there, right? And unfortunately, we don't have time to follow it through, but the deeper conversation there is a cultural conversation as to, do people see that as right or wrong? Or do they have a cultural understanding that culture just is, right? And maybe it's not right or wrong. People drive culture.
Absolutely. Exactly. I think you are correct. People are not going to see that as right or wrong. It's just as it is, because, for example, in Venezuela, we have a high value for the women who participate in the beauty contest. For us, it's like a championship. Everybody watches the Miss Venezuela, and then the representative who is going to represent the country on the Miss Universe is like appointment television. Everybody is watching because for us, it's like winning the Super Bowl.
Yes, yes.
It's bring it proud.
I know when the last time Puerto Rico, I'm originally from Puerto Rico, when Puerto Rico won the last Miss Universe that we won, and we tied Venezuela, right? We were both at five.
Correct.
It was a big deal, right? One thing I think would be interesting, and we'll just kind of wrap up with this question. A lot of times, people who really don't have a good understanding of culture outside of America, let's say, what would you say is the difference? Just, and this is really top level, because I know there are many nuances. What would you say, that because you've lived now, and you lived in Venezuela, you've lived in the United States, you've lived in France, you lived in Argentina, and you lived in Mexico. What would you say are the main cultural differences between those countries? Just high level, just to help.
Okay. Okay. Well, I would say, for example, in Argentina, the value of friendship is one of the most incredible things that anybody can experience. Your friends are your family. In most Latin American countries, people would think, oh yes, that's the whole Latin America. In Argentina, it goes to another another level, a deeper level. And I think it's because of their Italian immigrant population, because in Italy, the value of friendships is at the same type of level. In the engagement with friends, they bring you in. You are really family. You know, Venezuela, I have dear friends, and I love them tremendously. And we have that level of friendship that is similar to family. But in Argentina, is even deeper. So I would say that is something that I will highlight about Argentina. About France, I remember how well they take care of the children and the education of children. I never like going to school in any country that I've been, except France. When I was there, the way they teach you is led by the students in a way that is magnificent. You don't even notice that they take you to a park, and then the teacher asks a question. So how do you think trees are born? And then the kids start answering at the level that they have. And then the teacher starts asking, but do you think this? And do you think that? And then the kids intervene. And I remember it was magical. I could not wait to go to school. And my mom was worried because, you know, in Venezuela, I was always making excuses not to go. And in France, you get to go on Saturdays. And, you know, you have Wednesdays off, but you go to school half day Saturday. And my mom wanted to just go on a weekend trip to see the different chateaus around Paris and all that. And I was like, Mom, no, I have to go to school.
Oh, my, that's interesting.
And she was like, do you have a boyfriend?
I was going to ask the same thing if you had a Frenchman there waiting on you, you know?
Not at all.
How about Mexico, Mariana?
Mexico, one of the things that I want to highlight about Mexico is I have never seen a country with more dedicated workers. The solidarity between people in Mexico is incredible. I lived there during the earthquake of 85. The next year, they had the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup. It was in 86. So I saw how Mexico was destroyed in the 85 earthquake, that it was unbelievable. The city, how it so many buildings crumbled. And then how the Mexican people worked to lift up their country and gave us one of the most happiest World Cups ever. Was 86 in Mexico. So, you know, I always, when people ask me of the countries that I live in, which one would I like to rule, for example, be a politician? I would like Mexico, because I've never seen people work harder than the Mexican people, and also the artistry that they have. You have people over there who are painters, who are
sculptors,
who are singers. The art, you breathe art in Mexico, and it's so beautiful. Yeah. Oh my goodness, it's so talented. The people of Mexico are extremely talented.
It's awesome. And how about the U.S.? How do you view the U.S. culturally? You've been there 20 years.
Oh my goodness. Yes. When I moved here, I had the vision of the United States as being, you know, the military power and the economic power of the world, etc. So a lot of the rhetoric that I heard growing up around the United States was a little bit negative, like, oh my gosh, the United States always thinks that they can impose themselves, etc., etc. And when I came here, what I saw was completely different. I saw people, neighbors caring about neighbors. The volunteer spirit is here.
Yes.
And it was a lesson for me, especially comparing it to Venezuela, because Americans, when they see something that is not working, they don't wait for the government to fix it. They do it themselves as a neighborhood organization, a nonprofit, volunteers, etc. And if it needs the government to be made, then they lobby. They go to Washington. They lobby their congressmen and the legislators to do it, but they make it hands on. So it was beautiful when I came here, and then I my son was born and he became a Boy Scout. How that volunteerism spirit is alive here, and I think that is the greatest power of the United States, their people, and how they unite to solve issues, to solve problems, and they take care of one another.
That is fascinating, and of course you are fascinating, and I think probably one of the greatest things I read about you, you were recently, I think the second year in a row, you were awarded with the a top 50 Latino influencer in the state of Georgia. And I think from what I can tell and knowing you, I think beyond there for sure. But somebody wrote on when you were announced as a recipient of that award, excuse me, they wrote they should create another category for Mariela.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know if you saw that or not, but I thought, yes, that's exactly the case. They should create another category for Mariela.
Oh, you're so kind.
Te quiero mucho. You are an amazing, amazing human being, amazing woman.
Thank you.
You're an inspiration to many, many people. And so thank you for coming on Culture Matters. It has been just an amazing honor for us.
Thank you so very much. It has been an honor for me to participate in this conversation that I think a lot of people need to engage in cultural matters.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Ricardo.